Because I mean, as far as I understand, you have an experience of this both waves of migration, your own story, which is an old story, and then you live in Washington in a community which is more like after Second World War migration wave, right? So I'm really interested about both of your experiences, like being young and a child in New York and then moving here. So if you just can start wherever you want, actually, or here or there, or just by comparing.
The thing is, I wrote some things because I'm not good at dates or anything. That my parents were born in 1896, and then they came, I think they came here 1922, but I'm not really sure. And my mother is from Dorp, Pridomjala, and my father's Jan Peter Nakrasu. And they came here and they met in New York. And my mother worked in a hat factory, make fancy hat, ladies' hats. And my father started working in men's hats, but then he got a city job as a maintenance worker for the New York subway system, which was a big help when the Depression came, because all the hat workers lost their jobs. And my father, he just had a big decrease in salary. But he was able then to support his family and also help out a lot of Slovenians who had nothing, because they used to come to our house. And my mother, I remember my mother giving bread and things and people carrying out shopping bags full of food as they left my house. And the thing is, my father was always mad at my mother because she was giving away everything. But my mother always had this open hand. And so but they called it St. John's Kitchen, which is my father's name. Instead of St. Mary's, they call it St. But there again, women weren't that important, so it was St. John's Kitchen. And so then I have a brother and a sister, and my mother always believed in education. My father would have been, well, if everybody wants to go to work and earn money, that would have been okay. But my mother, said, no, they have to go to school. And people used to make fun of her that she was, why are you sending your children to school, especially your girls? Send her out and have her go to work.
Slovenians.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
Because
mostly.
it was a Slovenian community.
Right, it was a Slovenian community. And my father mixed more with Americans because of his job. But because of my mother's work, she was always with Slovenian women, because all the women in the factories were Slovenian. And but my sister refused to go to college. She said, no, that's it, she's going to go to work. But my brother and I did go to school. And then I went to the College of Mount St. Vincent up on the Hudson in Yonkers. And I majored in biology and minored in chemistry. So then after that, when I graduated, I went to work as a technician at a hospital. And I was there just a few months. Then I got a job for the New York State Department of Health at Sloan Kettering Institute. Have you heard of that? That's one of the most famous cancer hospitals. So I was doing cancer research there for, I don't know, about 5, 6 years, right? And then I got married, 1953, and Conrad moved to Washington because he got a job with the Voice of America.
But he was in New York
He was a,
before we
that's where
met
we
there.
met,
You met there.
but that's where we met. And that's where we also, both of us were very active in the activities in the church. We put on plays, and I was in the choir, and I used to play the organ. And when I first started school, I didn't speak any English at all. In kindergarten. But then I learned enough so that I skipped the second grade. So I can speak both. But when I'm in the States, I speak mostly English. But if I go back to Slovenia and I'm there for about 2 or 3 days, I can speak Slovenian extremely well. But, and my husband and I talk this mixed thing, half Slovenian, half English.
Ah. And because your parents spoke Slovenian at home?
Well, my mother insisted that we speak Slovenian. She said, if we spoke English to her, she said, I don't understand English. Talk to me in Slovenian. Whereas my father, again, because of his work, was more apt to speak English. We could, you know, we could talk to him in English, but not my mother.
So she was insisting, right?
Mm-hmm.
on speaking Slovenian.
Right.
But only with you and your sister? There were many. Uh-huh. With all the children.
And then when I came here, I worked for a while at the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology, mm-hmm. at Walter Reed, again doing research. And then I got pregnant, and then I quit my job, and I didn't work for a while. But my neighbor and I started an editing company, and we ran that from the house for about 10 years. Where we edited medical journals and all kinds of scientific articles and what have you. And that was a perfect job for us because we could always take a job or deny, say no, we didn't want it. It would depend on this, you know, the children's schedule and whatever.
That was a good idea.
It worked out very well. And then as the children got bigger, we were one of the, you know, when they're talking about splitting a job, two women taking the same job. Well, my friend and I did that. We took, each one worked about 20 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
And at a publishing company. And again, well, this time we were doing mostly statistical editing. And then I was doing that for a few years. And then I got a job at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, also writing and editing. And so I was there for about 16 years.
So you never went back to your initial field of work?
No, never back. Because the thing is, I did do the initial work, but then I felt that it was really very, unless you really went ahead and got, you know, a degree in master's or PhD or something.
That's true.
It would be just, you know, the lower work and would be very repetitive and boring. Whereas this was a lot more interesting and better paying too.
That's good.
So, and now because I work for the government, it's also very good because of the pension that I'm getting. I don't think I would have gotten such a good pension at someplace else. And another thing that at NRC, the woman who hired us felt that she wanted older women who had experience, were raised a family, mm-hmm. and could work with the engineers who were, to her, they were like little boys. So. And so it as I said, it, you know, it, the whole thing turned out. I just loved that work because everybody that I worked with was, they all appreciated everything I did for them. You know, I would make corrections. That nobody ever got mad. They all, you know, thank you. You made my job better and mm-hmm. all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and that's basically it. It's then I quit and I've been retired since, when did I retire? Dates are really bad for me. 1997. And so I've been home.
Well, that was a long working career.
Yeah, yeah. And then, but in between, I've always kept busy with all kinds of extra activities. When the kids in New York City, I sang in a choir, I played and acted in all kinds of Slovenian plays. Then I played the organ.
Mm-hmm.
Then I also, my brother and a friend of his were members of the Manhattan Trio. We played accordions. And I remember playing during the war effort. We played for Yugoslavia for peace or some kind of rally that we had. And then, of course, when I came here, I worked in a school office and a playground guard, and they have that a lunch program. Anything that they needed, you know, at school, I would always participate in that. And then I also worked for the Florence Crittenden Home for Unwed Mothers. So I was a mentor there for a while. Uh-huh. And then I was a Brownie leader and a Scout leader and all the kind of things that you do with children. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And but then one of the biggest activities that I got into, I became the secretary of Ženská zväza in 1965, in the beginning, right. when Irene first started it.
Right.
And so I've been active ever since that time. And in the beginning, Irene was really the driving force. She was the one who was molding the group and whatever. But then for some reason, she got mad and she quit after about 5 years. And she just walked away from the group, never came back. And so to a certain extent, I was there the longest. And so I picked up, you know, then we had different presidents. So each one should have to start fresh. And so I think I did a lot in helping to organize all the activities that mm-hmm. we had. Mm-hmm. We'd get a singing mm-hmm. group from Cleveland, then a play group from Toronto, and then organizing picnics and, well, you know.
And dances.
And dances, and now with social program. And then you always have to change things because, you know, where are you going to hold your event? What is the best day? What day can you get it? For example, we no longer can get anything on Saturday, so we have to do things on Sunday. So you always have to develop new ways of dealing with these situations. And then we've had a lot of other kinds of activities, and my husband and I have usually been like the co-chairs for whenever a singing group like mm-hmm. Rybnička Octet or Vasilovci and Lick. I think we had, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We've had 7 groups coming in to give a concert. Mm-hmm. So we've always, and that again, each time there's something different. You think it's set one way, and not, you can't do it that way. You got to do it another way. So you have to keep reorganizing and reshuffling. And then we also had with the chapel dedication, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. was the dedication itself. I was in charge of the art exhibit that they had. They had the artists from all over the United States bringing their paintings. And then they had the 10th anniversary and the 20th. The 20th was the biggest. It was combined with Bishop Baraga.
Yes.
That was really incredible because we thought we would just have like, it's just like this concert, Rybnička Octet. We didn't think we'd have enough people, and now I'm turning people away because we have too many. And at that time, it started at, oh, we're going to have about 300 people, and wound up, I think we had about 3,000. Mm. And now if you're working with the hotel, and, you know, first they give you a small room. Now, but wait a minute, now we need a bigger room, then a bigger room, and then a bigger room.
It was great.
Oh, wow. it was really exciting. And at that time, I got a lot of the younger people interested.
Yeah.
Because the younger people don't really like to join a group like Ženská zväza to come to the meetings. But I've always said, now you have to get them interested in a particular event, mm-hmm. then mm-hmm. they come, mm-hmm. then they're good about it, then they will come, and then, you know, it's once a year, once every 2 years, or whatever. So that's how Valerie Buhins came in, and, you know, and her brothers, and all, you know, different people. And again, they may just come for that event and never show up again, or anything else. Uh-huh. But I feel that this is the way to get them involved, that otherwise. Although now what I find interesting, that Ženská zväza at the national board, they have a bunch of new women, young women, and they're with the times. They're into the internet. They have, which they never, the older group, you know, that they didn't think about it. And also I can see the difference between Ženská zväza and KSKJ.
Yes.
Be, because they're not, they're still the old guys. They still were doing things. Finally, now I think they have a web page, but they're very slow. And men don't catch on too quickly. And so they're, and somebody, several people have already said that Janska Zvezda is far ahead culturally than KSKJ is.
Who said that?
That, I don't remember, several people said it.
Culturally.
That, and I've said it too, that basically I think that the magazine Zarya is way ahead of the Glasilo. Glasilo seems to be interested, or KSKJ seems to be interested more in sports, in tournaments, and, you know, baseball and leagues, bowling. But they don't seem to go that far out, you know, as far as cultural events are concerned. And again, as I said, you can see these younger people, they're really, and they're pulling in new members incredibly fast. Just the past year, they've pulled in I don't know how many. And so it's interesting to see the different, the way things have developed in both groups. And somebody brought forth the idea, I don't know, you know, Jim Chesnick?
I've heard about him.
Yeah. And he's a thinker. He yes. analyzes and everything. And one of the things that he has brought forth at a meeting was that at some point it may be necessary to combine the five Slovenian organizations or whatever. There are some we don't even really know about. There may be small groups someplace under some kind of umbrella organization in order to make sure they'll survive. Because Janska Zvezda doesn't have the money. they're really hard-pressed for money, but they have the ideas. Now, KSKJ has the money because they're in the insurance business. But they're not getting, I don't think they, and they haven't really done anything to get new members. Or they seem to realize, they sort of think that people will just, you know, you know, we're here and they'll come, which is not true. You have to work to get them, which is one thing that Nika, as far as Janska Zvezda is concerned, Nika is very good. She's a very good sales lady. She knows how to pull people in to get new members. But as far as KSK, especially this group in Washington, I don't think they've had any new members since they started. They're not aggressive enough. They feel that you could just, as I said, people just come to you because you're Slovenian, which is not true. And also, the younger people just aren't necessarily interested. And if they only have one activity, which is St. Nicholas, that's fine as long as you have small children. But once you have older, you know, what? Then what? You don't have anything.
Why do you think younger women are interested in Ženska Zvezda?
Well, I think part of it is just the new way they're doing things. That's getting on the internet. I think you've heard of the neighborhood, thing, Lynn Jaluka, what she put out. This all is, you know, I think it's, and they've gone now, they've become quite aggressive in getting new people, talking to people you know, how, look, why don't you join, and that kind of
what
stuff.
What about from their perspective? Why do you think they are interested, not only just because they are invited and there are occasions, but they feel that they should join and participate?
You mean the younger women?
Yeah.
Or the
new members, Slovenian women or Slovenian descent?
As I said, you just have to keep offering things and hoping that something will catch on. And as I said, right now, I think some of the concerts that we're having have brought in people. Again, you know, whenever, one of the things that I said, whenever we had one of these concerts or the chapel dedication or something, you know, somebody would say, well, should Janska Zvezda do it or should KSK do it? And I said, no, I don't think that's a good idea. Because right away you're going to get into territory. Oh, this, you know, and if there's any money, how much did any group earn? And not only that, because I belong to both. A lot of people belong to both.
Yeah.
Then I said, well, how do you do? You divide me into half and say, half of the money goes to Janska Zvezda. I said, money with money, it's tricky. You have to be very careful. So that I suggested the ad hoc committees. Mm-hmm. I said that mm-hmm. way, well, Janska Zvezda now has started to take in men. Before it was only women. So I said, so how are you going to get women to take over a big project when you really need some men to help to do certain things? And what, now they're going to come and they're going to be under the women? I said, that's not going to work either. Or, you know, vice versa.
Right.
So the best thing is this neutral thing. You have the ad hoc committee, then you can pull in anybody you want, and only for that project. You get people from Janska Zvezda, and you can make it smaller or bigger depending on the event. And you have, and then you start bringing in the younger people. That's where the younger mm-hmm. people with the chapel started to come in. So we started getting more, you know, getting mm-hmm. them interested.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I talked to Valerie yesterday yeah. evening.
Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. She and her two brothers, now all of a sudden, you know, they're willing to be mm-hmm. on any committee that, and mm-hmm. they're willing to do, to help out and do whatever mm-hmm. is necessary.
On the projects, right. Yeah, mm-hmm. the projects. Mimi, how was your family life back in New York with your mother? There was the Slovenian language. What else that you would say was Slovenian and or you understood it as Slovenian?
Oh, well, Slovenian language, Slovenian customs, the you know, Chris, all the holidays were all done the Slovenian way. And in fact, some people have said that if you want to get back to the real Slovenian way of doing things and even recipes, you will find the original more quickly in the States than you would in Slovenia, because in Slovenia it has already been modified.
Sure.
And but that would be with the old, with my mother's generation, or you know, not necessarily with the really young ones, but my mother's and mm-hmm. you know, the next generation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and my mother always supported all the everything that was in. We had a series. There was one pastor, especially in St. Cyril's Church, who should have been a movie set producer or something. He should never have been a priest, because he always had such the time when Yugoslavia had fallen. It was like, you know, with the occupation and all this. He had this ceremony where he had put a grave in front of the altar, and he got a handful of earth from Slovenia, and he put it there, and then he had, then he was like praying over it, and, you know, this, but we will rise again, and everybody was just crying, you know, Moya de Jela, and all this. And then a priest would become a new priest, have the first mass. He would have the sister would get dressed as a bride. The rest of us would be bridesmaids. So it would be like a bridal party. Then he got an open limousine with the priest and the bride sitting up front and holding the chalice and the wheat and the wine. And then he got police escorts that would escort this group, some of us walking and the rest in that car, from the priest's house to the church. I've never seen any other religious group, although now the Hispanics are doing a lot of the, you know, they have processions and whatever out on the street. Everything was done in church, but he was the one, he pulled it out, and it was just, again, and these were all the, you know, my mother was always there buying us the clothing or making the costumes or baking or whatever, you know, had to be done. She was the real, the focal point, the one who, and she did it very quietly. She didn't, you know,
talked about it.
She just did it. Whereas my father liked to have a good time. He went to Veselice and he danced and, that he didn't. If it hadn't been for my mother, I don't think we would have been that interested in Slovenian activities. But she was the one who did it. And then she would always talk about Slovenia.
She did.
She always talked about her, how she was 12 years old when her father died, and she was the oldest of five. And her father had been a carpenter. And when he died, he had a lot of debts because he had borrowed money to build up his business. And everybody said, don't worry, just let the debts go. You know, you don't have to pay him back. But my grandmother says, no, that would be a shame. That would be terrible. Yes. And so she worked to have the debts paid off. But one of the ways that she did this, my mother was 12 when she went to Prague to work in a hat factory. Then she also went to Vienna to work.
She went to Prague when she was 12?
Yep. And then I don't remember which came first, Prague or Vienna. And she would send all her money home. She didn't, you know, and she was the oldest. And then she told me, like, the youngest was her sister, and the money she sent home, her sister would get a new bicycle or something, but my mother was the worker. She just kept having, you know, to do everything. Finally, when she was 27, her mother said she had to come to America because in America you're going to get rich.
And so she
came. So she came.
When she was 27?
Yeah.
In a way, mother sent her.
Her mother said, that's what you're going to do. And she made the arrangements with neighbors who already had people here mm-hmm. in the States that she would go and live with them and work in a factory and pay off the voyage. She had to pay for the trip and everything. And so she did. She lived with this family. My mother was very good at telling stories. She lived with this family. And that she was really, at home they said, oh, she's going to be like our daughter. We're going to take her, take care of her and everything else. But no, when she was here, she came here, she had to be like the maid. They made her do all the work. Then she had to stand while everybody else ate. Then she could have her food.
If anything was left.
And then the wife used to be jealous of my mother. Because, of course, my mother was younger and prettier. And she used to be jealous, you know, that the husband was looking at her. And then they would get drunk on Saturday night and fight all the time. And she said, then you know what they did? My mother would say that the next morning in church, they were in the first pew going to communion.
Yes.
He said, the thing, my mother always kept her faith. She was always religious. She never, in spite of all the things that happened, you know, somebody might have become bitter, but she didn't.
Yeah, obviously.
She didn't, whereas my father did. My father didn't go to church for a long time. And
she talks about Slovenia. And
oh, yes. So the thing that was really very interesting, mm-hmm. she also told me, she was always told a story about her. She was at home, and all of a sudden, the church put the cow in there. That, you know, the church bells were ringing that somebody had died in the village. So her mother said, hey, Mitzi, go to the church and find out who died. And when she got there, she found it was her brother had been killed in the war. And so when I went the first time to Slovenia, and then we went to Dorp, it was the church bells were ringing. It was like I could just hear my mother telling, you know, this story. It was just unbelievable. And but my mother never wanted to go back.
No.
She said it would have been just too hard for her to relive everything. But my father would have liked to go back, but he never did. And my father never talked much. He came from, well, Šempetra, that's where, you know, the very bad, he was very poor. And he was the oldest son. He should have stayed there to take over the farm, but he said no. He didn't want to do that. He wanted to leave because what was there, there was nothing there for him.
When did and he came?
He came the same time as my mother, so they were both about 20. So it was 27. Yeah, they were about. It was 1922, I think, that they both mm-hmm. came here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But he had fought in the war. And he, in the First World War, and he was captured by the Russians. Mm. So my father always loved the Russians because he wound up working on a farm as a prisoner of war. And he said, and the people that he worked for were wonderful. They were really very, very nice people. And I think he even fell in love with the daughters. But you know. But then, of course, when the war was over, he came back to Slovenia.
So your mother, she... didn't want to go back just because it would have been too hard.
Well, that's what she said. She could never. And then I think she sort of felt some bitterness about her own mother sending her away, whereas the other children were able to stay home and reap the benefits of my mother's work, even in Prague. And, you know, none of the other children were sent away, just my mother.
Yeah, the oldest.
And so she was, she never said it, but you can tell that, that there was, I think she was bitter about
that. So she, once she left home when she was 12, she never came back?
Oh, yes.
She came back,
and then she, until she was 27, she would keep going back and forth. And then another time she was, worked for a grof, and, mm-hmm. and she was saying, telling how that the Grufica was such a wonderful person, and how she would go around and help, you know, feed everybody and do everything. And but there my mother fell in love with the grof's son. I could have been a royalty. It didn't work out that way.
Sure.
And
sure.
So she was worked. Then she also worked, went to Steyrska to work on a farm. It all depends on where.
The work
at
was
one time
needed.
She worked in a sawmill. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. She was, I think she said she was 5 years old. And she was going, or maybe it was even in her father's, that they, uh-huh. there was a, she was under a saw, sweeping the sawdust, and all of a sudden somebody said, oh my God, and they pulled her out, and the saw had gone, you know, right, it didn't go all the way through, but she, yeah, it cut her scalp. So she had a really, really tough life.
But she was a happy person as a character.
Oh, yes. She was happy, optimistic.
Generous.
Generous. Generous to a fault. But she was more of a homebody. My father would have liked to go and do things and go sightseeing or visiting places. But my mother, she had two things that drove her. One was the fact that she was so poor in Europe, and the second that she went through the Depression. And if you have to go through something like that, you're always concerned, where is the next meal coming from? Where are you going to have enough money for, you know, you don't forget it.
No.
And my father forgot it, because my mother took care of all of that.
Exactly.
And, you know.
She couldn't afford to forget
it. No.
But she was always for these events and parties around the Slovenian community.
Yeah, but she didn't go to the Veselice.
No.
Maybe if she did, she would always sort of sit in the back with the, you know, friend or two. And I can still picture sitting there and not dancing.
No.
She never danced. No.
Why not?
And one of the reasons she didn't, she said that one time when she was very young, I don't know how young, in her teens, she did dance a little bit. She was wearing, you know, just, she didn't know how to dance, but just some dance steps. And she went to confession. And she said she still remembers the priest. Every place there was a long line, but with this priest, there was nobody there. And he must have had a bad leg because the confessional door was open and his leg was sticking out. He couldn't, you know, bend it, the knee. And she went in, she told him she had danced. And he started in that she's going to go to hell and she's going to lose her soul. And did she promise if she will never dance again? And my mother says, no, I'm not going to promise. I can't make that kind of a promise. So he didn't give her absolution. My mother was also a rebel. Quietly, in her own way, she also sometimes defied with even church authority. Because another time somebody came to her. He and this woman were not married, but they had a child. And they came to my mother and they said, would you be the godmother and would you go to the priest and see if he would baptize the baby? And my mother went. Sure enough, she went. And the priest says, I'm sorry, Mrs. Grill, I can't do it. The parents are not married. You should get them to come and get married. Then I will baptize the child. And my mother said, what are you talking about? My children come home all the time from a Catholic school asking me to contribute money to the missionaries. So they pull babies out of garbage pails and then they baptize them. And here you have, you know, I'm going to be the godmother, and you refuse to baptize this child. He's not, I can't do it. And so she stormed out. She was mad. And the next day, the next Sunday, there was a sermon about this Gurecha Zhenska who was telling priests what to do. And my mother knew it was about her, because she stood up to him. She, you know, she wouldn't just listen. But unfortunately, the baby was never baptized, and about 2 years old, it died. So
she couldn't do anything against this.
But again, as I said, even in spite of what priests may have done or anything, she always said, it's my life, it's my decision, whatever. I'm the one who's going to be judged, not the others can do whatever they want to do, and God will judge them. That it's not up to me to do it.
But she never danced.
She never danced, never. She never liked it either. She didn't. She just wasn't for that. But our house was always full of people, always. That we always had a lot of people over. And the thing that was also during the Depression, because I know my husband and I had these discussions, and I'd say, yep, you know, Slovenians, some, they drink. And my husband always pictures Slovenians as these wonderful, holy people who never do anything wrong. I said, Conrad, I grew up amidst Slovenians. I said, so don't tell me what they're like. They're not. They're human, just like anybody else. Because we went through, there was a man who was going to shoot his wife. And my mother's, they lived upstairs, Slovenian. He was drunk. He would go on periodic binges. He would disappear for 2 weeks, and then he'd come back, and we'd say, well, where were you? He says, somebody kidnapped me. There's really, but my mother, one thing, she drew the line. She says, anybody can come to visit if they're sober, but if you're drunk, I'll throw you out of here. And she would have. She, you know, she wouldn't listen to anybody. And she helped a lot of people who, there was one woman who went, she was, had cancer, and she was dying, and my mother went to see her, and she's, I really would like to see a priest, but I can't, I've led such a terrible life. And my mother said, no, you just wait. And so she went, and she got a priest to come in and talk to the woman, and the woman then died peacefully. If it hadn't been for my mother, it never, you know, it wouldn't have happened. Because the husband was the one who was the stinker. He wound up, I think he had a wife in Europe, and he came here, and he had this, and he had syphilis, and he gave it to his wife. And they didn't know, she didn't know until she was dying of cancer, because syphilis goes underground, and 40 years later, all of a sudden she was tested positive. And so, as I said, I said, these are the kind of people I know in New York, in you know?
Sure. This was a Slovenian community, a very close, big community. You didn't really know.
I'm not saying they were all like that.
No.
But somehow it seems that these were the ones who came to our house, the ones who really needed help, who were really, you know.
Yeah, and there were hard times, and they drank. Right. Yeah, and they still do, I mean. But I wanted just to mention this community of Slovenians in New York. You really lived together, right? And you played with Slovenian kids.
Oh, yeah, the house that we lived in, it was mostly Slovenian families. Just there was, I think, two families were Italian and one Jewish family.
At that time, how was this feeling of being Slovenian? Was this a problem? Were there any tensions?
The thing is, somehow, again, I don't know if it was because of my mother. I know a lot of people in my generation said they weren't Slovenian. They didn't want to be known as Slovenian. That I think they finally came out of hiding. It was during the war. Before that, they would deny that they were Americans. That was the...
Before the Second World War?
Yeah.
They were hiding it.
They didn't want to tell people who they were. But I never felt any discrimination or anything, Or if I did, I always shrugged it off. I figured, well, you know, if you're so stupid, you can be prejudiced. I always had a sense of my own worth. I never felt that I was different or, you know, less just because my parents were not Americans.
And you think this came from your mother, pride?
So. But she never said it or never preached it or no. She just did it. She just acted it, and that was it. And so it's, there was pride. I remember walking down the street one day, and it had been snowing, and a boy took a shovel full of snow and threw it in my face, and he said, "You dirty Slovak." They didn't know who I was.
Yeah.
You know, Slovak.
Yeah.
They didn't know that. Yeah. And I'd say, "No, I'm not. I'm a Slovene." But my face was still full of this dirty snow. There was definite prejudices. There were all kinds of. But I've always said, I lived in a section of New York, and I was over here with Juduska. We have the Jewish community. And then Talianska, then the Germans. So you were and then as gradually, the Germans were the first to move out. And then the Poles, and then the Italians. And then came in the Hispanics. But by that time, the whole thing had really gotten very bad. But I said, I think that was the best way to grow up because I met all these people.
So you did.
Yeah.
You mixed with other kids and.
Oh yeah, in school, and because I went to a big high school. There it was about. It must have been about 4,000 people in the high school. It was all girls school. My graduating class was about 900, something like that. And I was the first. I got all the honors. I got first honors in math and in science. And again, when I was in school, I was good in Latin. And the teacher said, "See, the reason she's so good, because she knows another language." So the teachers reinforcing some of this.
That's interesting,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
At that time, I mean, it was not as common as it is today to praise
right.
the bilingualism
have, yeah.
and all this stuff. Uh-huh, well, that was something.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's... but I think each, you know, for the... Like my sister stayed home, took care of my parents, and she speaks Slovenian, because she had to, you know, since she was home. But I don't think she was as Slovenian. See, because then the thing that happened, then I married Conrad, so I moved into another group of immigrants. And I know that a lot of the older immigrants resented these newer ones.
Sure.
Because the newer ones came here and they had the benefit of all these programs and the... whatever, whereas the older immigrants had to work hard to get wherever they were, so they resented them, and some of them, and Irene has some of that resentment against the newer immigrants, and my sister has it a little bit too, but my brother moved away. He was an engineer and he did a lot of traveling and everything, so he wasn't, but he never really became that Slovenian either. Because he married an American and he mingled more with the Americans.
So you were the one who really took the most of from your mother concerning Slovenian.
Well, no, my sister
tradition.
Took a lot as far as traditions and everything else, but she stopped. There was this, it was just like Irene has this block. You just stop here and you don't go, you don't take the next step, you know, forward. I don't know if you know what I'm saying. You're stuck in that time and in those prejudices and what have you. And so.
But you were lucky in a way because also the place you moved in, you know, you are forced somehow to adapt to.
Right, because
to understand
we were,
it to.
Right, Conrad and I were one of the first Slovenians here in Washington. And he would be telling people, come to Washington.
You were one of the first?
We were one of, yeah.
Yeah, because here There really was nobody, there was nobody. Right?
And then, you know, he would tell his friends, come, there's a job here, and there's, because there were all kinds of jobs. In fact, I think we knew Priego, long time ago.
He came here after the war?
He came after the war. Conrad knew him in the war, in Europe. And we knew him in New York City.
Because he
came to New
there.
York first, right. Then he studied in someplace out west. I don't remember. He went to school. But he would come back to New York. And he stayed with my parents. They had a farm. And he stayed at our house for several weeks when he was, he needed a place to stay. And so that I'm almost sure that Conrad sort of influenced him to come to Washington. Eric, too. We knew Eric in New York City.
Oh, he was in New York City.
He was also in New York City.
Oh.
And I even know when Eric decided he was going to get married. We were there when the idea germinated, because mm-hmm. he was at our house. He used to come over often. I guess I was like my mother. We always had a lot of people coming, to stay for weekends or supper or what have you. And Eric would come over often. And somehow or other, somebody else was there, and this man was saying, oh, Eric, I think you should get married. It would be a good idea for you to get married. And Eric is walking up and down. Because Eric was like a poet, and he was sort of mm-hmm. always dreaming. He wasn't completely in the world, And so he's walking up and down, and he turns, he says, you really think I should get married? And this other man says, yes, I really think you should. And after that, Eric then sort of got the whole thing going, to get married to Nika. But that's where at first we helped plant the seed.
Because Judita Prelog, you know her?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. She told me, she was my first interviewee, and she was telling me about this especially happy period in New York, right? Mm-hmm. In after the Second World War in the 50s, there were so many young Slovenians, mm-hmm. students, intellectuals, actors. So it must have been really,
oh, it was really
something.
They had a lot of activities, a lot of plays, and always Veselice, and had a singing group, and Priego was directing the singing group there. And then a lot of young people met and got married, from that group. And just before this group came over, the church had, there were some younger people who were involved, and I remember we were setting up, trying to organize dances, but it just wasn't working out that well. They would dance, and then at the end of a dance, the boys would go on one side, the girls, I guess they were emotionally not or immature, ready for anything. But then, all of a sudden, this new Conrad's group came over. I don't know how many came over. And they then started going, to the dances. And then the whole thing started to really become much more lively. And
here?
A lot of, no, this
there.
Is in
mm-hmm.
New York.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you, Prelog was there, and Conrad's brother's wife, Maria Mayach, was part of the group. And so, yeah, that's right. For several years, that was really, really a very lively group. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, then people started to move away. They had different jobs and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole thing.
So some of these people moved then to Washington.
Right.
Maria
then moved here because Conrad's brother came and stayed with us, and then they met, and so she moved down. And Jagodic, he's dead. He moved down. Eric moved down. I can't read. But the whole thing, then Irene was the one who really started the
mm-hmm.
whole movement,
mm-hmm.
because she went through phone books, and Eric was helping her to get contact Slovenians, and she got the first group of women to join to make Ženska zveza. And then after that, when KSKJ heard that Ženska zveza had a branch here, then they contacted Konrad if he would set up a branch. So Konrad was the first president of Bishop Baraga. And so that's how the whole thing just sort of... And then the more you do, the more Slovenians keep coming out. You know, now I have a mailing list of about 300 people. They're not... Or 300 names, families, not just people, not individuals, but...
300.
But they're not all Slovenians. A lot of them are Americans who have come to our activities.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
But still, they're all... And every time you turn around, oh, there's another... And then the chapel, of course, has brought in a lot of people. People mm-hmm. come to the chapel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about your own family? How did you raise your kids concerning the heritage and identity?
We had the same traditions, Christmas and Easter and everything else. But they've all... Well, Peter, I think, is the most still... involved in Slovenian activities because he also married Sarah, who is half Slovenian, and Jim Chesnik is her, she's Chesnik's daughter.
Right.
And so he was home the longest, and he's the one who comes here the most often, and anytime we need anything, I'll call Peter up. And the other two girls, one Helen, is a nurse, and she worked at the Washington Hospital Center for the neonatal unit for newborn babies, the sick newborn babies. And so she was working there for quite a while. But then she married somebody who is part Irish and part German, and he's very mixed. And he doesn't quite understand why Slovenians are so excited about being Slovenians. You know, after all, he's not excited about being Irish and German and everything else. So he doesn't get it. And so, you know, all of the kids have been back to Slovenia. And in fact, Peter was with us. Peter took his whole family about, I don't know, 5 years ago or something. Helen was going to come this year, but she has terrible problems with her back. She's afraid to the long trip. She just mm-hmm. wouldn't be able, you know, to do it. Mm-hmm. And now Maria is married to somebody who was born in Great Britain. So she sort of has this dual, loyalties or whatever, because he's very, he goes back to Europe because his mother is still there. So he has very strong, and his sister, so he has very strong ties to England. And so, of course, I mean, you can't do Maria's ties with us, but sometimes the others sort of take, you know, they take precedence. Well, they have to, because he has to go back, you know, if he wants to see his family.
Yes.
It's, whereas Maria can see us anytime. It's not such, you know. And
so it's more... emphasis put on the Brit side of...
And to a certain extent, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just because this is something, yeah.
Because then the mother comes here to visit, and the mother is a very strong lady she is the kind who will, you know, in a British voice, and she will tell, you know, Paul is 42 or something, and she tells him off as if he were 6 years old. You're always complaining that you're gaining weight. Well, then why are you eating so much? You know, she's that kind. She has no tact or diplomacy. But he's very attached to her. He calls her every Sunday. She's a widow. And so he's really very... But he's a very... Also, as far as our family is concerned, he is very... family oriented. He's always trying to, you know, let's go here, let's do that with so and so, and you know
so
what I'm
saying.
So
they come for the special occasions, family reunions, or
oh yeah,
Christmas,
they always
kind of parties.
Yeah. Yeah, they always they're here for, you know, for all the holidays and everything. And then sometimes we did, like this year, Helen had our whole family and Chuck's whole family for the Easter Sunday. Mm-hmm. And then Christmas, we have to work it out that sometimes we have Christmas, you know, we have Christmas Eve and Chuck's family has Christmas Day. You always, and then sometimes Paul and Maria go to England for Christmas. So it's a lot of, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, moving around and doing things, mm-hmm, to make it work, you know, and for everybody.
And grandchildren?
We have eight.
How do they feel? Or I know they are children, right?
So. Yeah, they're children. They're not really that whatever. And Peter just adopted two African Americans, so they're definitely not Slovenian.
Well, it depends how you define Slovenians, yeah, you know.
But so that, you know, that's a completely new dimension to the family.
Yeah, very interesting.
And
it's,
but no, they come, they you know, he takes them to Slovenian activities and everything else. And another thing is I've started at the Ženska zveza because I was trying to get these younger people to come, but they don't like to just come and sit and do
nothing.
Oh,
absolutely not.
Or else they disappear, and then you say, where are they? So, and yet I noticed that when they did come, the boys, and I would say, help me with this, that, or the other thing, they were very happy to do it. They felt very important. Oh, you know, they're gonna, in fact, some of the ladies were even annoyed, what are these kids doing here? And I'd say, they're helping, you know. And so I proposed a service program that Ženska's, I don't know if they're going to adopt it or not. I sent the proposal to the home office that they the same way that, I don't know if you have service programs in Slovenia or you know what they are.
Conferences have it.
No. This is in grammar school or in high school, or if you when you go to communion, you have to put in a certain number of hours doing some kind of community service work, helping your neighbors, you help mow the lawn, whatever. And so this has caught on. A lot of it, a lot of schools have that. Before you graduate from high school, you have to put in, I don't know, 60 hours of community service work.
Okay, yes.
So I said, why don't we have the same thing for Ženska zveza? Have that, you know, if anybody does anything, then we give them a certificate that they have done something, and then they can present it as part of that service program at school. You know, they help at a Veselica for 4 hours. They serve the drinks, or they clean up, or, you know, whatever they do, whatever you need for them to do.
Well, or take care for the children while mothers are at the meeting.
Or something, whatever. But I sent the proposal to the home office, and I don't know, I'll have to check up and see if they've done anything. But as I said, we could still do that in our own branch. We have enough younger people, and, you know, and I think that if you get, that it becomes sort of official, and they get a little certificate, that they're more apt to do it than for the mother to say, come on, go in there and help her do whatever you're, you know, whatever you're doing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's.
Did you speak Slovenian with your children?
The thing is, I did, but Peter had, you know, trouble in school. So I had to do a lot of tutoring and a lot of helping. And so somehow you just sort of slide into English so that they, no, we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And Conrad worked at night, so he wasn't even home, you know, when they were home from school.
Right.
So he didn't participate that much in their learning Slovenian. And then he was away on trips a lot. He was always sent someplace as part of his job. So he wasn't home.
But you did bring them over to Slovenia and show them around.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they liked it?
Oh, yeah. They. And Conrad's family is a very warm family. There's no way you could not like them.
Great.
They're very, you know, all of them, all his sisters and a brother. And so they, you know, they make you feel very welcome.
They are there in Kras still, or they are scattered around?
No. Conrad's brother is in his, in Shanapich. That's the home. And then he has three sisters who live, you know, in the area, Celia, and I forgot where the other. But they're all within that. And one brother is here in Silver Spring. So, but those are the two brothers who left, who were involved in the political activities, if, you know, during the war, who then had to leave. Otherwise, they might have been put into prison or who knows what. Whereas the others were all younger. The other, well, the sisters didn't get involved in that stuff, and the brother was quite a bit younger. And also, the parents had started to send Conrad and his brother to school, whereas the none of the others ever went past the you know, just the eighth grade of elementary school, because the father somehow or other felt that he had sent his two older sons to school and he lost them, because they left, and he didn't want that to happen to the rest of his family. So,
your mother believed strongly in education, you said.
Yes.
Where did it come from? What do you think?
My mother was considered one of the brightest students when she was going to elementary school. And in fact, I think it was the priest who said that he would be willing to pay her expenses if her mother would send her ahead to school, that she was that bright. But the mother said no, because she had to stay and help pay off the... Maybe if her father had been had lived, her life would have been different. She wouldn't have had to take on all these responsibilities. And so two brothers died in the war. One brother who was younger, you know, he was at home, and he still, a brother and a sister still lived in Slovenia after my mother came here to the States. The two other brothers, one died in the war, and they never recovered his body. Whereas another one, he came home, and I think he had been gassed or something, and he died too, as a result of the war. So, but my mother, she loved to read, and I don't really know where she got that strong idea that we should all go to school. That she really, I guess maybe too, she was smart enough to see that, you know, without an education, she came here and all she could do is work in a hat factory and, you know, have not an easy life at all. Whereas she could see that if other people, you know, oh, they went to school, oh, they can become something more.
So she was very happy when you started going to college.
Oh, and yes.
She was very proud. Was it difficult to be in school in that period? For you or for them? No.
I never felt that I had, and I always, it's the same thing like a lot of people say during, you know, we were very poor, because I remember putting newspapers in our shoes because we couldn't afford to buy another pair of shoes. Again, because, you know, during the Depression. And but I never felt deprived. I never felt poor. Somehow or other, we had a good family life. We had all these things going on. We had, you know, for Christmas you got one doll and you were happy with one doll. Now the kids get 10 dolls and they're still not happy. We had, you know, a big treat was going someplace and getting one hot dog and one soda for a nickel. And that, my mother was, oh, you know, this was really something extra special. Then I remember another, a man who was a barber and who, I don't think he worked, but he just sort of would go amongst Slovenian families and cut people's hair. And, you know, they would pay him, whatever. And he would always come over with a small 6-ounce bottle of Coke. And my mother, my parents were also bootleggers. They made whiskey at home.
Wow.
In fact, my father almost was caught and would have gone to jail as a federal offense. Mm-hmm. But the man, there were two detectives who came in, and they found some whiskey up at the... my mother had gotten rid of all the whiskey we had, but she forgot 1 gallon, and it was up high in some place in a closet. And we also had a still, and she gave that still to a Jewish neighbor, because they didn't go after the Jewish. The Jewish people were not bootleggers. Mm-hmm. It was only the Slovenians who were bootleggers. So they came, and of course, they were looking for the still. That would have sent my father to prison, because that was the offense. But then this guy found, he saw the bottle, he says, hey, bring it down. And he tasted it, and it was whiskey. And he said, okay, let's go. And the other guy says, no, we have to, you know, this is evidence. And the other guy looked at him, he says, look, don't you have medicine at home too that's similar to this medicine? Let's just leave these people alone. They have children. We didn't find a still. Let's go. And so that was another way my mother made some money. And everybody in the house was making either wine or whiskey or something.
Really?
And then the men would go down, and they were always tasting each other's wine, and then they would all come up a little bit shaky. So, as I said, I never, and for school also, I just sort of, I don't know, I studied, and I never had the feeling that it was, you know, that difficult. Mm-hmm. And again, as I said, because they had 16 classes of about 40, 50 people in the class, and it was all, the top class was the academic program, then you would go down, and this was the ones who would just go to high school, and that would be it. They would never, you know, work secretarial courses or what have you. So I was always in that top class. And then when I graduated, I got a full tuition scholarship.
Oh, you got
to college. Well, that was another reason that helped me go on, because it would, you know, my mother didn't have to pay, and she was not going to give up a good bargain. And then my brother also got a half tuition scholarship when he graduated.
So that's why it was possible.
Because of the scholarships. But my sister always, she and I were rivals, sort of, and so she was never going to do what I did.
Oh.
So in a way, she sort of, she bit off her nose despite her face. It would have been better for her if she had, you know, gone to college also, but she said, no, I'm not going to be like Mimi. I'm not going to go.
So it was always like this from childhood.
Oh yeah, we were always rivals. Always, in fact, we went to 8 o'clock mass on Sunday, and then somehow on the way home we would always get into an argument. So when we came home and we would open the door, we were arguing, and I can still hear my mother say, "You people, you just came from mass, you just came from communion, and you're fighting." But it was, you know, now when I see our grandchildren, everybody's always fighting. They're meant to fight. Even if they love each other, they're still always fighting. But that's true. Yeah. So as I say, looking back, I can't say that it was hard being poor, and I can't say that it was hard going to school.
Mm-hmm.
It just happened. You just did whatever you had to do to, you know, keep moving. Mm-hmm. And that was it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And it was not difficult being a Slovenian, right?
No. I always felt that, you know, I know mm-hmm. another language. You don't know another one. I do. I know two. So that was a sense of, you know, I'm a little bit arrogant too.
Even as a child, you felt like it?
Oh, yeah.
Because later in as a teenager, I hear a lot about this special feeling, mm-hmm. feeling being special,
mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Yeah. So why do you think, why Slovenians get so excited about being Slovenian?
Why? I don't know. They have a really, no matter what, I think they have a strong sense of being. Well, I think part of it could be that they're a small country. They were always put down. They were always under something, Austria, whatever, way back. They were under somebody, and in order to, again, you're not going to tell me what to do. You know, you're going to say, you should speak only German. You say, wait a minute, we're going to speak Slovenian. And that's what kept the Slovenian culture alive. Mm-hmm. Well, it's just the same thing that they say about your faith, that the faith really flourishes during times of persecution. You know, nobody's going to tell me that I'm not supposed to believe. And I think that's the big mistakes that dictators make when they start putting people down. Let them go. Let them do whatever they want. Then pretty soon they'll be lost. But if you hold them down, they're going to remain. And they're proud of the fact that, you know, the high literacy rate, all of that has. And when you come to the States, you cannot believe nobody knows who a Slovenian is. Not even today. Not even. Now that Slovenia is free. Some people may know, they say, oh, but if you say, I'm a Slovenian, everybody will look and say, oh, that's in Czechoslovakia, right? They don't know. You say, no, it was in Yugoslavia. And then maybe they'll know. Even Yugoslavia isn't that well known. And so again, they've always had to sort of fight for their identity. They had to be defensive about it, not just... you know, if everybody knows who you are, so you're British, everybody knows you're British, so what? You know, big deal. But to be a Slovenian, you have to always, as I said, be aware, to a certain extent, be aware of it, and to be able to explain it, or to, you know, tell people where Slovenia is. And they're always very proud. If there's an article about Slovenia any place, right away they're Xeroxing and passing it around. Look, New York Times had this or whatever. That's and again, it's one way. Now people know who we are. I think that's part of it. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And those who denied it, as you mentioned, there were before the Second World War, there were people that really didn't want to have anything.
Yeah, because there was this whole trend also in schools that you did not, you, for example, in grammar school, if you were Italian, you went like this a lot, you used your hands. So the nuns made you sit on your hands. So you would, this is an Italian characteristic. And other teachers too, like, you know, with, and so a lot of people, you know, bought into that. And I think it's the same thing even now, you know, with the immigrants and everything else that's going on. There are so many Slovenians whose parents came here and who are again, oh my God, you're going to allow Mexicans in, or you're going to allow we should close the doors to immigration. But you wouldn't be here if we didn't have immigration. So people saw it, to a certain extent, are also protecting themselves. You know, they're afraid that if other people come in, maybe they'll lose jobs, or, you know, who knows what is going to happen. And I think that could be partly the reason that, you know, so many of my generation, when they were really younger, their parents were, you know, were saying, you should learn English and you should be an American. A lot of people were saying that you're American first, and then forget about anything else. And but the tide keeps to, once it's this, and then it turns back again. So you never know, you know, at what point anything is going to be. And like in California, you know, they're doing the dual, they're doing the main subject is going to be Spanish. Well, that I think is stupid. I think you should learn English first, and the fact that Europeans can learn their own language plus another language like you shows that people are capable of learning two languages.
Oh, yeah.
It's not something, you know, that you should experiment with. So I think that but I don't, I think it's wrong for people to lose something that they have. If you have all these Hispanics who know Spanish, then somehow or other you should help them keep it. You should help them become Americans to learn English, but they somehow or other should be encouraged, because you never, you know, with the world the way it is today, who, you know, not everybody speaks, well, I guess in all over the world, most people speak English now, even in Europe, right? With meetings and whatever. Mm-hmm. I guess the only place where you could go and still, where people are not speaking English, is in the Arab world. That there, I think you're not going to get that many places where, you know, everything is going on in English.
Yeah, yeah. Part of Africa and parts of Asia, right. And China. Mm-hmm. And, right. Well, fine, Mimi. Shall we stop, or would like to add something?
Well, I can't think of anything else. Do you have any other questions?